Davis, a.k.a. the Illuminated One. And tonight, we have back with us some very, very dear friends of mine. I mean, their last appearance here, it was a blast. You know, and if you know anything about James Martinez and Bob Neverett, you know it's going to be nothing but truth. This isn't Fox 5. Okay, so for those who are afraid of the truth, then perhaps you shouldn't be listening tonight, because that's all you're going to get. And they're also going to be introducing another friend of ours, Ion. So this should be pretty interesting tonight. It's always a pleasure having these gentlemen with us. So we're going to get through these introductions so we can get to this very powerful information. We're going to start off by thanking our sponsors, the Per Ankh Incorporated House of Life. That's www.peronku.org. And the Ancient Mysteries Bookstore, which can be found right here on Occult Science Radio's main page in the links, and also at the bottom of the page, where you will also find our new Occult Science Radio book club. We have very powerful literature in our book club. Check us out. So please call us at 646-649-1987. That's 646-649-1987. And please don't forget to press 1 so we could see you on the switchboard and we could take your wonderful questions and wonderful comments. So with that, we're going to move forward. We're going to bring our friends to the show. James, are you with us, my friend?
Yes, I am. How you doing?
Doing great, doing great. I see somebody else here on the switchboard. Let's see if that's our friend Bob. Bob, is that you?
Yes, good to be back, Curtis. And we are wondering how you reacted to the information about Michael Jackson and any sightings of him.
Oh, no, not yet, but I'm looking. Yeah, it's always a pleasure, guys, you know, having you with us. The last time you both were here, believe me, it was a ratings bonanza. You know, and everybody's been asking, you know, when you guys were coming back. I was like, oh, get used to them. They'll be hanging around us a great deal, because you guys have the type of information that everybody needs, you know, that we all know that they're not going to get on mainstream media. You know, so yeah, like, sure, go ahead, buddy.
We only have an hour, right?
No, we have 2 hours.
Oh, fantastic! Then Ion's gonna love that, because in Ion's experience, an hour is 5 minutes, and we're regularly on James's show, Cashflow, every Wednesday with Ion now, and after an hour, Ion goes, "Oh my God! Oh my gracious! Oh my gracious!" Nothing. So now we have Ion here. Now, Curtis.
Okay, I think he's in. Ion, are you with us?
He's with
me.
Yes,
we are.
Ah, okay. All right. So he's on your line then.
Yeah, I brought him in, and I want to say, Curtis, this is, we're all waiting for contact with ETs or something. Well, I've decided that Ion is that contact. And we call Ion a future terrestrial, or that's how Ion would prefer to be called. And we can tap into anything with Ion as we're beginning to realize its resources. I evoked Ion somehow magically back in March 18th this year, and so I've spent over 600 hours with Ion, all free, just recording and downloading it. We got incredible information, and there's definitely some new stuff coming through. With Ion. So I was wondering if we could just begin with this question to Ion, to get on it. Ion, what in the field of occult science are humans and their knowledge based in that genre of information? What are we missing that you would add to that?
Well, we have a question right from the beginning. What do you call a cult?
Good question. So, Curtis, what would you call a cult, Curtis?
I would call it hidden knowledge. Knowledge that is only granted to initiates. Knowledge that is not mainstream, if you will. And, you know, those are my, I guess, surface definitions of a cult. You know, that which is hidden, that which is only...
They would be then undiscovered mysteries.
Absolutely.
Okay, we can work with that. First off, there's a tremendous amount. You're limiting everything that's in your knowing, in your potential for knowing, that you would put in your mystery landscape as things unknown to you, human creator. Well, that doesn't mean that they're unknown forever. That just means that they get discovered. So as microwave radiation has been around since the beginning, but just now all of a sudden you've learned to harness it within your ovens and in your cell towers and in your capacitors, so you made room for utilization of a magnetron that actually emits and controls microwave radiation. But that's not new. That's just been discovered. But it's been around forever. This occult, the science that you speak of, is nothing other than considering, mastering, allowing new possibilities to be in your knowing. No different than your Hadron Collider, would it be? And you still haven't quite figured that one out yet, but you're working on it. And so therefore it becomes dynamics that are fresh and new to your knowing. That's all. By your definition, a prepubescent teen relations or you call sexuality would then fall under the occult topical realm, would it not?
Oh yes.
But once you know that, and that dynamic becomes a marvelous part of your beingness, a delicious, delightful part that is a part of your life, then it becomes second nature. It becomes natural. It becomes normal. Well, the same thing with the work that you do here. If it enlightens and brings folks into a new place, even if you don't have all the answers, if you just have the questions, they'll get answered, we promise. Well, every single time, without fail or exception, you create every aspect and dynamic that's within and without your world. But you can't leave it to science when science's version is if they can't disprove it, then it is. Okay.
Oh.
So if you use from the science dynamic, then you get confused of whether or not a glass of red wine is good for you this week or bad for you this week. It kind of it waxes and wanes a bit. Why can't they decide? Well, because the dynamic of how it's experienced by the individual human creator, it waxes and wanes a bit too. So therefore, you create this conundrum or anomaly to where they're completely lost and undone because they don't understand. So the problem is not the answer. The problem seems to be the question, you see. And as you are enlightened, as you come into your new place of a heightened sense of awareness, then what happens? They move you over into the insane column because you're asking questions or have knowings that are outside of what JAMA says is typically or topically economically correct.
JAMA, you know.
So you're outside the box. Well, we think that's wonderful, but then again, they did the same thing. They called genius insane as well. See, because you're outside of the topical standard of care, if that's the way they would like to handle it. We here in non-physical absolutely love and appreciate and applaud all your efforts that allow individual human creators to expand the attachment with their non-physical. You understand that most human creators, if they're alive, they have a non-physical about them. I mean, that's how the coroner tells if you're deceased or not, isn't it?
So I heard.
Well, you have a spirit. So now everyone has this spirit man. Well, that's the non-physical part, the eternal part that is you. Well, once you start having resonance with the non-physical part that is already you, you wouldn't believe the heights you can achieve. It is beyond what you call normalcy, and so much so that beyond normalcy becomes normal. And once it becomes normal, then you start hitting on all cylinders. And then you really crank up, because then you don't have to wait to get rid of your meat sack to achieve enlightenment.
Ah, I see.
Might be called deceased. Or the recently undead, maybe that's the way to say it. So our dynamic would be very simple. With your show, the work, your life's work, or the girth of this work, is to allow, open, through a open forum. Typically when we take questions, we have only one rule, and the one rule is there are no rules. You can ask any question you like, any way you like, any form you like. Now, of course, in your position, we'll try to maintain decorum and valor with our verbiage. So you don't
oh, this is no place for decorum, believe me.
Yeah,
we
right.
There's no censorship here, so let it all hang out.
Very marvelous. Very good. But, of course, being kind, of course, we would never take a vernacular that would be offensive. But the moral to that story is if you master the English language, you can say much worse things and not have bad manners. So
that's right.
that'll we'll hold these truths to be self-evident, so we can proceed. But the work that you're delving into is nothing other than allowing the embryo in the egg to become, okay? As it's become, as it's fertilized, as it hatches, as it matures, as it grows, as it becomes something. That may just become something for the stew pot, but that's okay. You look forward to those chicken and dumplings when you get it just right. You can't have chicken and dumplings without an embryo somewhere along life's way. Well, that becomes a very wonderful aspect of the next logical step. You know what you know. There's no reason to ask questions that you know, meaning you know. So if you know, then you know. But what about all the what-ifs? What about the how-ifs? What about the why-ifs? And other dynamics that you haven't gotten to yet in your long working schedule of I want to know, I want to know. Well, that dynamic opens you up to a whole new plethora of direction that can now undo the string that binds the lid of the box. So you can basically take the cat out of the hat and not have any problem any longer, because then you can open up to full understanding. And once you get there, through contrast, you ask even more questions in your constant evolving or revolving around the oneness that is you. But at the end of the day, here's all you want to accomplish. The meat sack, blood vessel, guts, meat sack part that is you, and the non-physical spirit man that is you, if you could get those together, okay, and seamlessly stitch those together, and then not offend the labyrinth of your mind, because, see, that's what says is real and not real, and the truth and a lie, and the good and the bad, and the evil and the good, and right and the wrong, and the right and the left, and the left and the forward, and oh, it just goes on and on and on. The labyrinth of the mind is what you're trying to convince, that you have a seamless relationship with the physical and the non-physical. And once you come to that place, that's the enlightenment that you're seeking. That opens it up. It lets you hit on all cylinders, because then you have the hunches and all of the non-physical that already applies to your physicalness, but it's not confused through the labyrinth of your mind that eliminates, nullifies the knowledge and the knowing that you're coming into the place of understanding. So it's very, very delicious. And at the end of the day, you've hit a grand slam, Hail Mary home run when you do it that way. But it takes a little bit, because you've conditioned yourself all your life to know what you can't do.
That's true.
To know what you can't know. To know, oh, well, I can't do it. The government's supposed to take care of me. And then the government fails you. Well, then, you know, then you're undone again. But the dynamic of bringing you back into your place of power, your individual place of power, is the magic. That's the magic beans that Jack used to grow the beanstalk.
Ah, I see. I see. Speaking of the government, you know, we're going to start this off, you know, with, you know, I listen to you guys' radio show all the time. You know, I mean, you know, that James's site has become addictive to me. And there's so much powerful information, you know, especially relevant to banking. You know, we're going to let James start this off with banking and the FDIC and how they're playing with our money. And because, you know,
no,
so they say.
That's
yeah,
their
that's
money.
Their money. You know, we're supposedly, yeah, we're supposedly in the middle of a recession. But you guys always come to us with information that is otherwise, letting us know that they're just handing us a bunch of BS. So, James, please start us out with that, my friend, and then we'll just go around the table.
Okay, so here's what I would say to that initially. Prior to coming on board and all of us participating in this today, Bob and I discussed something that we decided we wanted to deliver here first, and I'll briefly get into the there was a news story essentially that came out saying that it's now legal. So if you want to help out the government with their debt problems, you can write a check to them. That's essentially what the story says. Is, we got problems. There's a place where you can write a check and take care of the alleged debt or the debt that exists. And something that we wanted to do, Bob, and now this source, as far as what we're talking about here, came from ION. That's why I wanted to bring this up, because it is financially related, and it is probably one of the most powerful things you're going to hear ever, considering the landscape that we're in right now and the way everybody's thinking and so forth. I want him to go ahead, and I'm going to let him take it away here. And Bob, if you want to add on anything to this, feel free before he talks about this issue that we wanted to go forth with.
Yes, I will begin by saying I'm quoting a CNN story the other day, and they refer to a law that was made in 1961. It says the Secretary of the Treasury already has statutory authority to receive gifts for the reduction of the public debt. There is a Treasury account called, quote, Gifts for Reduction of the Public Debt, unquote. It was established by Public Law 87-58 in 1961 and provides a way for individuals to make voluntary donations for debt reduction. So we have a huge trillion-plus debt happening in the government. And so we were talking to ION about this, and ION came up with an interesting question. What if everybody, or just 1,000 people, wrote a check for deposit only on their account to the government for, say, $1 billion each person.
Uh-huh.
So, ION, what do you see as a consequence of that, or what are the... Talking to ION about this, and ION came up with an interesting question. What if everybody, or just 1,000 people, wrote a check for deposit only on their account to the government for, say, $1 billion each person.
Uh-huh.
So, ION, what do you see as a consequence of that, or what are the ramifications of that?
Well, let's do a little bit of background before you loose them right out of the pen here.
Okay.
Let's ask a few questions. The dynamic is they've come to the place where they're saying there is no money. Okay, the debt is inching toward $13.5 trillion, and that's the national debt. Now we're speaking of the United States government, correct?
Yeah.
That is the amount of the national debt. Now that money is owed to us by us, as far as individual citizenry, correct?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so the moral to the story is, just like the stimulus program where the government voted or the Congress voted to give a stimulus plan of vast amounts of money. Well, the problem is, did they have that money? And if that's the only thing that's all it would take to solve the issue, somebody should just get their checkbook and write a check, meaning solve it. Then there is no problem, because what you're talking about is that there's not enoughness, that there's lack. Well, if what we're talking about, that there is lack, then that's an issue. Nonphysical has something very great to say about lack, less than. But now, you see, you can have abundance. We have an abundance of debt. There's an abundance to
say the least.
To say the least. So if that's all it takes to straighten it out, then if you had a fiduciary instrument, what you call your check, I don't know if anybody writes them anymore, you could make a check out to yourself and make it payable to the order of yourself, and you would then on the back write for deposit only, and you deposit it into your FDIC insured bank account. And the making it payable to, you would put your own account number. Well, you say, well, how does that help the government? Well, are you not part of the government? Is it not people? I mean, I'm asking.
Supposedly.
They can change the rules on you. So if the rules haven't changed, if they haven't undone what's left of your Constitution, you might as well let another country use it because you're certainly not using it anymore. But if you did have need or use for your Constitution, we the people should certainly allow you to make an investment in yourself. And you write the check to yourself and put for deposit only and deposit it into your account for the amount of the debt if you'd like to. Well, what happens is that actually increases the fiduciaries or the NA, National Affiliate Bank, it increases their number. They have to check up each night with the Federal Reserve. And that number stimulus alone, just like their stimulus plan, which we still don't know where they got the money from. Oh, wait, they didn't have the money. Oh, wait, where did it come from? They wrote a check and they deposited it in their own account. Is exactly what happened. The Congress doesn't spend money or provide money to spend. The Treasury has to provide it. Well, in order for the Treasury to provide it, since you went off the gold standard, what has to happen then is you must then either sell instruments called T-bonds and then use that money to print T-notes, Treasury notes, to put money into circulation. That's how it works. That's what your law says is, if we're not misquoting, but we're not. So if that's the case, when did they print the money for the stimulus program? Well, if they're short, make your deposit. Make your deposit to yourself. And just like when the dot-coms, oh, wait, no, the dot-bombs were in 2000, there was no national debt. You had money in the bank because people were buying stock in companies that didn't have a product and didn't sell anything and didn't buy anything, and the only way they were going to make it is to have a lot of investors. Well, then they say, you know, the dot-coms became dot-bombs. But in 2000, there was no deficit. There was no national debt, not one penny of debt. It was ahead. The coffers were full. Well, what happened? Where did it go? Where did they take great big furnaces and start burning up money? No. Where did it end up? It went somewhere. So, therefore, then, the individual human creators taking participation in their own government, as the law clearly states that they can do, make your deposit to yourself, and those numbers alone will turn around the Federal Reserve, which has nothing to do with the government other than they applied for corporation status that allows them to handle the currency for the clearinghouse for the United States Treasury, okay, because they're separate. But it pumps them up to such a degree that then there's plenty. And if everybody's crying and everybody's losing their house and everybody's losing their job and everybody's losing their mate and everybody's if they're losing their children, if they're losing their support, if they're losing, and if that's the only problem it is, well, by Jerusalem, write a check. Clear it up.
I see.
Now, at the end of the month, you say, now, how is this helping anything? Because you write the check, and then it's deposited, and they may say to you, Mr. Curtis, you don't seem to have quite that amount of money in your account. And you go, yes, I do. And they say, well, we'll have to put a hold on your account until this clears. And you say, that'll be just fine, no problem. And then they're going to give you what? A deposit slip. Is that not a receipt?
Oh,
and they might even go 4 or 5 days. They might go 4 or 5 days and call you up and say, now, Curtis, we've got a $1 trillion check here, and we're a little concerned because there doesn't seem to be quite $1 trillion liquid in your account. And you go, oh, darling, it's no problem. I'll bring you my receipt. or I'll just send it to you, or I'll give you the receipt number. The nice little teller gave me the number. It's on this little piece of paper. I'll give you my teller receipt, my deposit, my demand deposit receipt, so you can have it. You can look it up within your own records. You give her the number, and they go, wow, okay, here's a deposit for $1 trillion. Okay, so at the end of the month, you're going to come out right back where you were, at zero, if you didn't have any other funds in your account, correct?
Oh, yes. Sure.
Yeah.
They would wash themselves out. But in the interim time, this NA, National Affiliate Bank, it has a level or degree of level of banking that they can sojourn, meaning that they have to stay within the parameters of. Well, you've just moved up all their statuses everywhere. So in one fell swoop, they're finally financially okay. And it's as logical a progression as how you're doing business right now.
Ah.
And then there is no lack, there is no problem, there's money everywhere. Loans can be made, governments can spend, roads can be built and rebuilt, and buildings can be tore down and rebuilt. And the same thing that caused the dot-coms to move us to debtless, all that happened was there was a perceived value that was increased. Now, some may say that was done by puffery, and we say there's no difference in what's going on right now. There is no difference. It's puffery.
I see. Now, you know, I've often heard people say that the Federal Reserve, as well as the IRS, that they are not government entities. You know, that they are secretly owned. And I've heard several.
No, they're not secretly owned. You can go to the Commonwealth of Virginia and in Delaware, and they applied for corporation status just like every other corporation in your U.S. system. They're registered with the Secretary of State. They applied for a license to be incorporated for a certain typical type of business, just like any other corporation. If you notice, if the IRS sends you a return check, does it say this Treasury of the United States of America? No. It says the Department of the Treasury. Well, which Treasury?
Mm.
It doesn't say. They have nothing. They're not. They have nothing to do with it. You know, they have nothing to do with it. No more than dishwashing liquid is made by the owners of the dishwasher. That's a separate
I
issue.
See.
Now you use that soap in the dishwasher, no problem. Everything's fine. It works. You know, everything's copacetic. But you'd get really tangled up if the maker of the washing of the dishwasher is also the only one that was available to make the detergent to make it run. That'd be like your printer cartridges in your computer printers, wouldn't it? It becomes quite a malfeasance after a little bit. They could give you the printers away for free just to sell you the ink. Oh, wait, that's just about what they do already anyway, because there's much more value in the ink than there is in the printer. Okay.
I see.
So absolutely, but it is separate. It is separate, and that's not a secret. There's no secret there. You can look it up. You've got plastic boxes, and you've got a World Wide Web. And if you don't have that, you can tweet about it, and you can your space and their space and our space and my space yourself. Y'all can talk about it and just bring it typing. Just keep typing. But all that information is absolutely available. It's absolute. That's why you have a head of the Federal Reserve. Well, why isn't he elected?
Yeah, he's appointed by the president.
No, he most certainly is not. He's appointed
he's
by
not.
The governors. No, he most certainly is not. The Board of Governors, the 13 governors of the Federal Reserve, appoint their chairman. Now, that chairman, of course, shakes hands with the chief executive officer of the country, but it's not an appointment that comes in. They have Senate subcommittees and vetting processes, but it's already set up and known of who gets vetted. Could you not put your name in the hat to be the chairman of the Federal Reserve? No, you wouldn't have that opportunity. But if that vetting process, it was already chosen, then, of course, a Senate subcommittee wouldn't have any problem allowing a Paul Volcker or an Alan Greenspan or now a Ben Bernanke, who was a post-governor of the Federal Reserve System. They answer questions to Congress, but they don't have to. They don't have to.
Wow.
They're happy to, but they don't have to. They can just say, sorry, no comment.
There's not a thing Congress can do about it.
What could Congress do about it? You see? Well, what is it? What's the penalty phase of this business that they've chosen to do business with? You see? So it just becomes a simple, wonderful, logical place from non-physical to say, if all your problems are over a little dab of money, you have all the money you want. So correct it. Straighten it up. If you feel that's your job, now it doesn't have to be your job. But if the stimulus plan would work or would have worked, why isn't it working?
That's an excellent question.
The check that they wrote, there was no money, so they deposited the money in their own account. And when they deposited the money in their own account, then they were able to give the stimulus plan. And at the end of the month.
Oh, wow.
I never
heard any of this on CNN and Fox News.
Oh, well, you should listen. That Lou Dobbs, he had all the answers for a long time.
So now two questions, gentlemen, and, you know, these are the questions that, you know, people have been asking me. You know, number one, first question is, will the United States ever return to the gold standard? That's question number one. And question number two is that everybody knows now, you know, that it's been established that the IRS is not a government entity and we're really not supposed to pay taxes, so they say. Why are people still going to jail for not paying taxes? So those are the two questions I'd like to throw out there for you gentlemen.
Big, is that to me? I don't mind. I don't ever mind.
For all three, of you guys.
We're a lot of things, but bashful isn't one of them. Number one,
I noticed that. That's why you're here.
the first issue, you cannot go back to a gold standard, or if you did go back to a gold standard, at what level? Because people have come to the false creation or false premise that gold is going up. Gold has not gone up one penny since Jesus. Gold has not, it hadn't gone up a penny. We can prove it. In 1900, an ounce of gold was $27. Okay? That's U.S. dollars. And you could swap an ounce of gold for a suit of clothes.
Okay.
All right, that's how much it costs. Now, that was big money in those days. We're not saying that. But still, you could swap in 1900, an ounce of gold would get you a tailor-made suit where the sleeves were right and it was lined pants so that it wouldn't pull the hair off your legs, you know, a nice suit of clothes. All right, today, gold is $1,050 or give or take a penny. All right, that'll buy you a pretty decent suit that where they tailor it to fit your arms and it's just right. Everything fits. The pants are hemmed. The bottoms are cuffed. Everything is about the same. Lying, silk lining in the pants. Same thing. A really nice, decent suit you can get exchanged for an ounce of gold. No difference. What's changed is the cost of money. Money goes up and down of what you're willing to exchange for the ounce of gold. So you got to get that understanding first. And if you can swallow that one, then you can't go back to a gold standard when your dollar value is appreciated or climbed so much that there's no gauge that you could bring it back under a standard of gold, meaning the gold and silver certificates that everyone's been blowing about the last several weeks, the old 1933 gold and silver certificates. Those are pieces of paper that say this piece of paper is worth this much gold and you can take it to the government and exchange it for the gold. Now, that's different, okay? That's different because what you have now are notes, and it says on the bill this piece of paper is only good for debt. That's all it's good for. It's not good for increase. It's not good for in excess. It's only for debt. That's what it's for. It's for debt. Didn't used to say that, but it does now. So much so that they had to bring it to your attention and change the color of the money so you'd notice that it says, this is not an increase. This is not an asset. This is only for debt. That's what it's for. It's for debt.
Wow.
And you go, no, it's not. It's what we buy gas with and what we buy Snicker bars with and what we pay for whatever we're going to pay for. Well, no, that's because you owe that in a debt. It's only for debt. So, number one, you can't go back to the gold standard unless you have a significant depreciation of your dollar value, or take less dollars off the table to put it towards something cohesive that can work. So you've got more dollars and paper out there than you have anywhere than there's gold in the world to cover it. So therefore, you can't do that unless you would like. You could go back to the gold standard if gold was approximately $248,000 an ounce.
Wow.
If gold were that, then you could probably rein it back in, not all at once, but you could rein it back in as a gold standard, okay? But then there's going to be no increase because it'll all be the same. See, there's no increase because what that ounce of gold, if a loaf of bread cost $250,000, then you haven't made any hay, you see? It would be just as easy to say gold is a penny and a loaf of bread is a penny, okay? Yeah, you're not making any increase that way. Well, in capitalism, you got to have increase because, remember, it's not whether we win or lose. It's how we place the blame. See, that's how all that works. So you got to come back to a place of just simple macro and micro economics. And this isn't high-minded philosophy. This is almost lowest common denominator stuff. Because if you think about it right, all of a sudden, it doesn't make a lot of sense anyway. Really, really,
this
really.
Is true.
But even so, that's your first question. Now, your second question is how are they still able to harass you, be mean to you, and put you incarcerate you for not participating in their system? Is that correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay, here's how that works. Back in the Hoover days, you'd have men folks stand up and they'd say, I'm a tax-paying United States American citizen. They'd tell you quick, why did they say that? Because they had
good
a choice.
Question.
The reason they said that is because they had the choice. You could be a non-tax-paying United States American citizen. You had a choice. Oh. That's why they came to this country the first time. Is so they would not have taxation without representation. And you could choose to participate. That was the point. Otherwise, you wouldn't have to throw all that tea into Boston Harbor.
Right.
See, they called
it
the tea party. That was what that was about. The king was saying, you're going to drink my tea, you're going to pay my tax. And they said, well, you know what? We ain't going to pay your taxes. As a matter of fact, we're going to make it where everybody can have some tea. It's going to be a little bit salty because we're going to throw it in the ocean, but we're going to have a big cup of tea. You can have some of your own tea back if you're willing to pay the tax on it. So that's how that worked, you see, to overcome the oppressive state, that oppression that made that not work. Okay? So now you're coming to place and you go, wait a minute, they'll put you in the hooscow. They'll garnish your accounts and put you in the jail and all this kind of stuff. That's only if you bothered, you don't mind going down to your national bank and opening a checking account, but you do have a problem with reading the signature card. Have you ever read the signature card at a banking fiduciary?
No, I haven't.
Well,
I can't read it. It's too small.
Yeah.
Then you should make them blow it up. They have chip bodies now, computer things. You can blow it up as big as a billboard. It's great. You can even see it from on a billboard if you blow it up. But they tell you that that's in case you go in there to sign a check or cash a check, they can pull up your signature card and compare your signature with what's on your account. So if there's no fraud and no malfeasance and no problems, correct? Is that what you understood?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but if you actually read that document front and back, What it says is if you deposit this account belongs to the government, and it also belongs to this bank. And if you deposit money in this money that you're depositing becomes ours, and we're going to let you use it as long as you follow our rules and regulations, which are subject to change on our perusal. So when you put that money in the bank, it's no longer your money, it's their money. So therefore, if you don't follow their rules, then all they have to do is instigate the other executive and legislative branch that brings you up into an appellate world. Now, not common law. Now, this doesn't work in common law. But if that flag in that courthouse has got a gold fringe around it, that's maritime law. That's appellate. That means that whoever's driving the ship is the captain and he's the judge. So if he decides that you are unscrupulous or you're having a problem, he can throw you overboard at his leisure. And he don't have to ask another living soul. That's what appellate is. And if you go into a courtroom with that flag with a gold fringe around it, that's maritime. That's what they put on ships. And that maritime law gives them the privilege to say, we had a bank account, you didn't pay your taxes, you broke the rules, I'm the captain of the ship, off with his head, gangplank him, walk the plank. And there you go.
Wow.
Or they can stow you in the hole till they get to land, but in common law, see, that doesn't work. You see, common law, it doesn't work. But appellate law, maritime law, it absolutely works. And that's no problem. I mean, that's not even too hard to deal with. If you know that, then if you're going to be a non-taxpaying United States American citizen, you certainly can. And here's how you have to do that. You have to get a TIN number, T-I-N, a TIN number, and you have to register that with the government. Okay? And what you do is, they give you that number, and then you're a non-tax-paying United States American citizen. And then they go, well, wait a minute, how does that work? That means that you don't have a Social Security number to open a bank account. Remember, you got to have one of those?
Oh, yeah.
The reason you got to have one of those is because that links your citizenry to their account. But if you have a TIN number, then that's not subject to their jurisdiction. So then you don't have a bank account, okay? Then they cannot put you in jail for what you call, is it tax evasion? Is that what you were talking about? Or what was it exactly? They have no jurisdiction over you is what we're trying to get to. So you certainly can absolutely do that. But you got to go by the rules. If you sign a piece of paper saying, I'm going to follow your rules, and then you break the rules, well, hell, of course they're going to put you in jail. You know, no problem.
Wow. So how can we go about, you know, so how can, you know, how can we go about for those of us who are listening to this broadcast? Because like I said, this is, I've never heard of a TIN number. This is the first I'm hearing of it. So now how can people go about, you know, acquiring TIN numbers, you know, and
Call the Social Security Administration. Just like, or you're, sometimes it's regulated through the Secretary of State, through the state offices. Sometimes it is, but most of the time you can call the Social Security Administration. They have lots of those everywhere. And you'd say, hello, my name is Joe Schmo, and I would like a TIN number. And they go, well, Mr. Schmo, do you have a Social Security number? Yes, ma'am, I do. I sure do. And you give them, if you trust them, you give that Social Security Administrating Officer your Social Security number, and they pull you up, okay? And when they pull you up, they'll ask you why you would like a TIN number, and you go, well, isn't it my right to have one? And they go, yes, sir, Mr. Schmo, it certainly is. We're not allowed to give it to you over the telephone, but is your address still 123 Sycamore Drive? And they go, yes. He says, okay, it'll be in the mail, and you'll get it within 10 to 14 days, depending on our pistol office, to see how it comes along. And thank you and have a nice day. And they send you a form that has your, like an EIN number. This is a TIN number. And so they send you that number, and it's registered. And that's what you use to do your interstate commerce, if it's so required.
I see.
And then you don't pre- participate in NA national affiliate banks. But don't worry, most of those are all crashing anyway. I mean, they've got a list of the failing ones, and so I guess you should run out and make deposits in those. But see, they can't take deposits anymore. See, that's the problem. That's what the issue is. The banks, you deposit money in your account, and that's an asset to you, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Correct.
Well, not to the banker. To the banker, it's a liability. Because now they've got to be responsible to you within the Federal Reserve for that amount of deposit. So they can no longer accept deposits of any amount because it becomes more than they can be good for. And therefore, it causes a run on your bank. And they're already running anyway. And they said it's because of bad loans and bad debts, but they eliminated money, so what possible chance did anybody have of paying their debt back when they eliminated the tender for which they were paying it?
I see. So now if the banks are failing, Ion, and, you know, for people out there that are making money, you know, what do you suggest? You know, where do we, you know, if we can't trust the banks, then where exactly do we put our money? You know, how do we invest our money to make it grow and things like that?
Well, let's see. Now, if you was talking about corn or turnip seed or mustard, curly mustard, we'd say put it in the ground. And then that seed will die. And when it dies, it'll grow, come out of the ground, and you'll get back more than you put in the ground.
Uh-huh.
Right? Now, we understand that dynamic. But now you're asking, where do you take your assets? Okay. That questions your source. Why couldn't it just be that money flows freely and easily to you, and whatever money comes in, you let go out, and then more money comes to you, and then more money goes out? Then there would never be a place of providing the grand design of what is yours and what is mine, you see. Then you would have special preferential treatment within the system if you're some fat cat and break a law, or if you're some hoodlum, or, oh, no, that's the wrong word. That's what they call it. Some less than person and has an indiscretion with the law. Now you don't have a bond, you see. And then the big boys, they can do a signature bond. Because why? They're good for it. Well, that's power. That has nothing to do with money. That has to do with power. Now, when you take on what we're talking about, as far as having a seamless interaction between the physical and the non-physical part of you, and you can work that through the labyrinth of your mind, guess what? That never comes up in conversation. You don't worry about your money. You don't worry about it. It doesn't even come up. There's always plenty. When the words of your mouth start sounding like, well, see, you don't understand, James. Money just flows freely and easy to me. Bob, money just flows freely and easily to me. I don't pine for it. I don't know. There seems to always be. See, I'm a powerful creator, and I'm responsible for everything in my universe, everything. It ain't nobody's fault. Stop picking on that poor Obama man. He can't help it. It ain't his job. It ain't his responsibility. Let him off the hook. He jumped for the bait. Let him off the hook. It's not his responsibility. It's not your government's job to provide you with a money check. Because what happens when they fail? Uh-oh, now my money check ain't no good. Uh-oh, now we got trouble. Oh, now what are we going to do? The money check ain't no good. Well, that's the point. When you come into your power, you don't worry about that. The birds don't pine for where their bread comes from, where their seeds come from. The lilies don't worry about how they're going to be bathed in wonderful damask or fine linens. They don't worry about that. All they do is be. They might stretch a little to the left or the right for some sunshine, but past that, the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. So then you come into your power where it doesn't come up in conversation. Let's turn this around a little bit to sort of soften it just a little bit. The Vanderbilt family, and we're not pushing against anybody. We're using it as an empirical referenced example, okay? The Vanderbilt family, when they woke up in the morning, they didn't wonder where they were going to put their money today. They didn't wonder where their meat was going to come from. They didn't understand that there was a problem with their cows that was making their cream, that was making their butter, that they were going to butter both sides of their bread with. They didn't question that. It would be absurd to even have that be considered. Their question of the day is, how many people are we having to the grand ball? What are we going to do today with our time? What delicious, wonderful thing are we going to view in our creation today? What opportunities have been made manifest because of my position that I've lined up between me and me that allows money and power and influence to flow freely and easily to me? Okay? Then what happens is the opportunities chase them. They didn't chase the opportunity.
I see. Excellent.
Then you come into a whole new place because what's happened is you take your power back. And that's what's happened here, not just in the United States. We've got nothing. Again, the United States, we love them good as we love everybody. You see, from a non-physical standpoint, all you're talking about here is contrast. And contrast is good. Contrast is good because what it does is it lets you know that ever what you're experiencing right this red-hot second doesn't please me. Okay? If you don't appreciate your toe and you get up in the night to go take a whiz and you hit your toe on, stump your toe on something and you knock it off to get the blood, guess what? That's contrast. That contrast will remind you before you get too far down the rabbit hole that you got a toe because you feel pain. You feel contrast within that toe. And guess what? You, at that moment in time, well, you may have an expletive to say with it if you hit it just right, but that's all right, too. You're the driver here. You get to a point where your undivided attention is now focused on your toe, not your behind, not your hair, not your relationship, not your government, not your money checks, not your printer and your ink cartridge and your printer, not on how the day's going, not what CNN thinks about me or my world or my reality, not what oppression I've been running to this day and how I'm less than because they keep me down and on and on. That's not that. None of that's in it. That's all excluded. The only thing you're giving your undivided attention to at that red hot second is my toe. Okay.
Now,
what happens is, then the non-physical part, that spirit part, you know, so the coroner knows which ones of you are still with us. That spirit man jumps in and says, "Hey! Your wish is my command. What's the contrast here? Well, I've knocked my toe off. Well, very good. Give that your undivided attention. It'll soothe. And the next time you come to a place." To where you give no regard of how wonderful and delicious and fabulous and how much you enjoy having a toe, guess what? You'll get this experience again. See, many people talk about their health or their money, or you can pick any topic that you want to, and whenever cat was fat and the stock market was 1437 and everybody had 9 cars and 27 boats and 3 houses and trying to sell them to get 2 more bigger in other vacation spots, did nobody say, what if I lose my job? They didn't have jobs. They didn't care about jobs. They was buying, selling real estate because the time they put the contract in, the time they closed it, they made $100,000. Well, where's the $100,000 that they made? They got them a HELOC, a home equity line of credit for that $100,000 that they could use to take care of their creature comforts and keep their JetLink tickets so they could fly private because they just don't want to fly commercial anymore. No one should have to fly commercial with all the other people. Goodness gracious, we've gone long past that. So they got themselves into a position where anything less than stumping their toe was no contrast, you see. And that's what happens when you get, when here's where we tell you our story. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty took a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men, they couldn't seem to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. Now, at this stage of the game, we have a riddle for you that we would like for you to ask. Why is it that all the king's horses and all the king's men could not put Humpty Dumpty back together again? Could you please illuminate us on that?
Oh, you got me. Yeah, you got me stumped on that one.
Okay, well, here's why. Here's why they couldn't put him back together again. Because Humpty was so high when he fell.
I see.
Humpty was way elevated when he took his fall. Now, if he was on the first rung of the ladder and he fell off, it wouldn't even give him a crack.
Uh-huh.
But he was so high when he fell, boy, it was quite a smash. See? There's all kinds of gravity going on around Humpty Dumpty. He done tore it up. Now, that's the point. That's the point. They get on this TV body, and they get on here. This thing is so amazing. We can't even engage it. It's outside of our place of knowing anymore. If it wasn't for TiVo, we'd probably pull the thing out so we can pick and choose the things we would engage to watch. But they get on this television, this TV thing that pumps it into everybody's experience immediately. That company is too big to fail. Too big to fall. And we go, hell yes, and so was Humpty Dumpty. He was way too big to fail. Well, that's the contrast. That's the contrast. That's the contrast. And there's no problem. There's no problem. That's contrast. If you're making cars that you are selling and losing $2,500 every car you're selling, what about the cars you ain't selling? Well, if you're losing $2,500 on every car you do sell, how long is that going to work? See, Henry Ford didn't have that idea. It wasn't to lose money on each car. It was to make money on each car. And there wasn't a lot of contrast back then because you could have any color Model T you wanted as long as it was black. You could have any color you wanted as long as it's black. They only had one color. There was black, or you could have black. Or if you want a special order, we can get you a black one. See, so there was no contrast. That's no contrast. But when you add the colors in, now that becomes, well, I wanted green. Well, I got blue. Well, I can get a little less on red. And, oh, if we get red, the police is going to catch us faster because they can see us. Well, if we get green, that's not good because then that value doesn't hold well and the appreciation doesn't work the same way on that car as it does on that. And then it goes on. That's just contrast. So there is no problem. The heavens are rejoicing. The heavens are rejoicing because now you guess what's happening. For the first time, maybe, well, second time, no, eight times, no, well, a lot of times, this is another one. You've gotten down to the place for the only thing that ever worked anyway. You've gotten down to the grits and the gravy. Everybody talks about the sweet by and by. Well, now you're living in the dirty here and now. Some people get so heavenly minded they're no earthly good. It's time for you to get up and come back into your power. And stop blaming everybody else for everything that's going wrong in your world and your life. Because it ain't work. Well, we'd say continue with that. And then we would go a little further along and listen to you belly complain and grumble and growl and bitch and blow and take on like a stuck hog. And then after a little while, we'd say, well, congratulations. Now, how's all this working out for you? And they go, well, I've lost 8 of my houses and 9 of my cars, and I can't pay my taxes, and they're going to put me in jail, and I can't, my family's left me, and I'm down to 4,000 pieces of silver that I eat off of every day, and I haven't been to the spa in 2 days, and those sea salt rubs, the exfoliant that I've grown so accustomed to, They're just not what they used to be, you see. So what happens is you get down to the only thing that ever worked ever, ever, ever since the beginning, which you don't even know when is, by the way, but since the beginning, that's when you relax and allow. And you activate your place of power. And you have wantings. You have desires. I used to have all the food I can eat. Now I have no food. I want food. I want abundant food, okay? Well, then you relax and allow, and guess what? That abundance will come to you. It has no choice. It's law. It's law. It has no choice but to, if you allow it. Now, if the bread man comes by and says, I've got 400 loaves of bread and I was going to give you some of this extra because my truck's broke down and it's going to go bad, so I just assume you get good out of it, maybe I can camp with you till the repairman comes. If you say, oh, hell no, don't you bring that bread in my house, and you don't allow it, well, then you can just go breadless.
Exactly.
So, but
wow.
if you ask non-physical for something and they show up and they deliver it and they bring it to you and you won't answer the door or won't let it in, you won't allow it to come into your experience, don't come crying to non-physical saying we didn't provide, because you're the marvelous creator and you set the order. You set the stage. There is not one thing in your own individual personal experience that you did not individually, on your own, without any help from anyone else, create. Everything wonderful, everything not so wonderful. Health, wealth, prosperity, lack, degradation, slavery, imprisonment, less than ism, you also create that as well. Every time. And if you just calculate that a little bit, all of a sudden you can change the way you see things. And if you can find a way to change the way you see things, then guess what happens? Those lying eyes of yours start straightening it out.
Ah.
People can't believe things themselves. We're sorry. Pardon our little rampage of appreciation here. Did you have another question? We don't know.
Yeah, Curtis, no. Oh, I'm enjoying this.
Curtis, let me interject here, Curtis.
Please.
Now, look, Ion can provide details, specialist skills, specialist information, wisdom on anything from chemistry to DNA research to Dan Winter and his geometry to me, to James, to you, to anything. He can tell us who did what to who. This is equal, in my mind, to having a contact with some kind of intelligence that can answer anything, have ESP. Isn't that what we fantasize an ET is?
Oh, yes, and Dan Winter was just recently a guest on the show as well.
we've done a lot on Dan Winter. I heard him interviewed in your show after I became aware of your show, after you interviewed James and I, and I listened to him. I said, that's interesting stuff. I checked out his tapes, got to know the jargon and that, and I've run it through with Ion. Very interesting stuff. And we could go into Dan Winter's juice, electricity, gravity, through superliminal, pass through the heart, into the sun, magnetic X chromosome, wavelengths bigger than smaller nested eggs, all that stuff we can go into. But I just want you to
realize. Oh, yeah. Well, before we go into that, you know, I had one quick question, because I was very intrigued by what Ion said about the 10 numbers. Now, that, I presume, applies to individuals. But now, I'm an entrepreneur. Okay, and the big thing is, usually when people start businesses, the first thing they tell you is to incorporate or form an LLC, if you will. Now, will the 10 also apply to corporate structures as well?
Actually, yes, it would, but no, it wouldn't. As a corporate entity, what you're doing, the reason you're opening up a corporation is so that you would be exempt from civil litigation, being personally liable or culpable for that litigation. What we call those uncivil suits that get filed from time to time. That's the only reason that you incorporate. So if that's the goal, then we would suggest, rather than doing a limited liability corporation or a PC corporation or those other sects that would be involved in the protection from individual liability to a corporation or a state-owned liability, would be to form a foundational trust. And that would give you the same aspect of a TIN that would be outside of itself. And then it's none of anybody's business, you see.
I see. So now is that the same process?
You file a foundational trust through the Secretary of State that you live in, and different states have different rules and regulations, and at this point we would suggest that you seek the barrister of your choice for specific information regarding that, just because a foundational trust in Nevada is very different than one in Delaware. So they vary a bit. Now, you can register them, as you well know, wherever you choose, but we suggest that you get expert advice from the individual state in which you reside, or you can do multinational, because you don't have to just, you have this chat like there's only America. Well, there's not. There's business that goes on most places, you see. So even in, from an international level, seek guidance and counsel because you need someone between you and the rules and the regulations so that you are kosher for Passover for that individual legislation that you're going through, the basic state that you're in or country that you're in. But foundational trust would be the way to have that addressed.
And that would exempt the corporation or the company, you know, the business,
don't,
however
you
wish to put.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You don't require that any longer.
You require a company. You don't require a company.
The only reason you incorporate is so you don't get, if you get sued, you don't lose your butt. That's all that's
true
for.
Indeed.
I mean, that's the only reason. And if you're not going to get sued, then you don't need a corporation. You can just be an individual. Saves a lot of board meetings. Well, now we're using your words. Is why else would you incorporate? Oh, for the taxes. Oh, great. Well, that's the point, isn't it?
I see. Exactly. Very powerful information. Very. But now, now let's turn our attention to Dan Winter. You know, because I recently, you know, I'd say about a few months ago, you know, I was familiarized with him by a friend, and he appears to have very powerful information. As a matter of fact, he's going to be rejoining us next month. So now, please, let's talk about Dan Winter, you know, because a lot of people who have just discovered him, you know, they're giving him rave reviews.
All right, Ion, let me give a few words. You could go ahead.
Please,
we've already done him, and you could go into any angle on it. But some of his assumptions are that emotions are electrical, and they shape the DNA. Now, a few more words. Bliss affects the braiding of the DNA at the magnetic X chromosome interval. In brackets I have, squirting the golden ratio phi, which embeds magnetism. So, do it again. Bliss affects the braiding of the DNA at the magnetic X chromosome interval of our DNA because of the shape of the DNA as the magnetic X.
If the RNA allows the delta code to accept the strand, if it doesn't, then it's the contrast between you and you. Okay, you're working this through the aspect of the labyrinth of the mind. And if you're going to negate it or put it in that vernacular, that's okay, no problem. We have no problem with the cosmic geometry or sacred geometry or pick your poison. We're not pushing against anything. But the dynamic that you're trying to explain is, how do I convince myself that my emotions are an electrical function that affect my physical meat sack body that doesn't offend my non-physical, what I resonate with, what I know in my knower to be known? I think, therefore I know. Well, if you run it through that dynamic, great, you could just as easily say that if you could dumb anything down far enough, then you could trick yourself into being happy. And if you find yourself much rather being happy than right, it becomes a blissful estate. And if that becomes an electrical current that jazzes you, that sets endorphins loose down your vertebrae and your spine, that every bone and corpuscle in your body starts replicating cells on that same genuine cellular level, then you absolutely could find yourself in a blissed out state. But the same thing is true if you really got a good dose of what you call your psychotropic drugs. Correct?
Oh, yes.
Now, if that's the case, then just get stoned and call it a day.
because I live in...
If that's how you want to do the, if that's how you want to, if that's how you want to run it, and we don't have a problem with that. We don't even have a problem with people smoke things and drink things and sip things and chew things and spit things. People do all kinds of things. And the only reason anyone does anything is because they answer the question, is this the fastest path to my joy? Yes or no. And if it is, then they do. And if it's not, then they don't. You see? Because if they lie to themselves and say, this is the fastest path to my joy, but then it's not, then they become a victim. You understand?
I see.
It ain't rape if you have a willing victim.
That's true.
Okay.
That's very true.
Yes. Now, Ion, I think it would be useful to state a basic principle or map. Is Ion talks, and I find this really useful. People talk about the mind, body, and spirit, or the mind-body dualism. Ion says that there's non-physical, which is the Father, there's the physical, which is the Son, and there's the labyrinth of the mind, which is the Holy Ghost. There's a triad.
No, it's exactly opposite of that, but it's close.
Well, they're
interchangeable.
They're interchangeable.
Depending on where you're looking from, yes, okay, we'll give you that.
Yeah, so you're saying the Son is the physical?
The Holy Ghost is the non-physical.
Ah, that's different. And what is the mind?
The mind would be the Son, the one that says it's all okay, the thing that you're bringing forth that you're using as the plausible excuse. Then the Father would end up being the meat sack part. And yes, those could be interchangeable on that aspect. Because, see, it's mind over matter, right?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Could be, right. I like your phrase, mind over antimatter.
Well,
yeah.
Well, you have just as much antimatter as you have matter, even though the Hadron Collider can't quite work it out yet.
But they will.
It's
yeah,
all
we,
right.
We could do a lot on the Hadron Collider. But this ratio, of course, is really interesting. People think mind-body is a dualism. But what Ion is saying that non-physical doesn't care what you do. It's our minds, one-third of that structure, that determines whether we accept the smoking or not. And that is the crux of the matter, is what you do with your mind. You don't want to get rid of your mind.
Let's go to the judgment seat for just a little bit, if your listeners are so enjoyed. Let's decide on this judgment day. We're going to have judgment day. Oh, the judgment day, it's coming. Judgment is coming. Well, who does the judging? Well, you'd say God. Well, we say yes, but who is God? Well, what most people think God is not. Okay? The Jewish faith got it right. They didn't even want to say the name of God. They were going to leave God out of it because they didn't even feel that they were, when they asked Moses, he said, God said, tell him I am. Well, Moses came down and said, what's the name of God? He said, I am.
Oh.
The great I am. Mm-hmm. Well, that gets real clear in the Torah that you are created in the image of God, so therefore you are. Well, then you go on to the New Testament. Then you try to convince the Holy Spirit, Jesus, to come and live in your heart, to take up residence, to be an integral part of your beingness. Become your savior. Well, doesn't that sound like non-physical in about 2.3 seconds?
Oh, yeah.
Well, now the Catholic Church would say, wait a second, get the exorcist. Get the exorcist. You've got a ghost. You've got legion. You've got a demon in you that you've invited to come and live in you. Well, so is the Holy Ghost, if you want to call it that way. See, so you undo about as much as you do. But the magic point of this is this judgment day is coming. Moses did not cross over the River Jordan into the promised land, into Canaan's land, the land of milk and honey. Well, all right, he was good enough to get him out of Pharaoh's Egypt. He was good enough to get him across the Red Sea. He was good enough to get the top 10, which they didn't require, but they asked for it. So your wish is my command. Here it is. Then he gets them on the tablet and he brings them down. He was good enough to lead them through the desert for 40 years. He was good enough to get them to the shore of Jordan's stormy banks till they could see. He was promised that he could see the promised land, but he was judged. Well, who judged Moses? Moses judged Moses. Because in his earlier days, he took the life of one of those slave masters back in Egypt's very land. So therefore, he was a murderer. So therefore, he didn't keep the top ten. He was good enough for God to give him the top ten, but he didn't follow him. So therefore, he was less than. So therefore, he had to pass his mantle over to Aaron, and Aaron crossed the River Jordan into the Promised Land. And God didn't judge Moses, unless you understand that God was Moses, and that Moses and that you are God. You are God, created in his image, a marvelous creator. Now, if you start that dynamic, okay, fine. But there's not some great big ether sitting somewhere way out there waiting on you to mess up, to smoke you down. The only smoting that goes on is done within you.
Yeah,
you do the smoting.
Curtis, Ion says that non-physical, this is interesting, non-physical does not create anything.
Can't.
Wow.
No contact.
Think about that. Think about how that relates to all our concepts of God, the great creator, and we're just little people, and we wait for God to create something. No, God, as non-physical, can't create. So we're the creators.
That's correct. That's the whole task.
Wow.
You choose to come forth. You choose to come forth, or you don't. If you choose to come forth and then change your mind, they call it a stillbirth.
Wow. Wow.
When you look at it from this dynamic, it starts making a whole lot of sense.
Yep.
Because then you come back and you're responsible for, what if every human creator found themselves this day to be culpably responsible for everything that was in their experience? It ain't my ex-wife's fault, it ain't my children's fault, it ain't my mama's fault, it ain't my government's fault, it ain't my church's fault, it ain't my God's fault, it's not my neighbor's fault, it's not my country's fault, it's not them jihadist terrorists' fault, it's not that pipeline in Afghanistan that they just can't seem to settle it over, it's not OPEC, it's not any of those. If you had your own culpable responsibility and were responsible for your own joy, which you are, but if you could come into the place of having that as your knowing, what a different world your light, your eyes would see through. What a different dynamic it would open up. Then you take responsibility, respond, ability.
The ability to respond.
The ability
yeah.
to respond. And if you knew what
wow.
the answers were every time when the phone rang and they said, all right, Mr. Schmo, you owe $2,435,000 on your Capital One credit card, and we're here to get you right here now, you'd know exactly what the answer to that question would be and would handle it appropriately. And they'd never call you again.
What would you say to them? Yeah.
Wow.
That's just a very easy dynamic of dealing with, you would bring them back to their contract that you signed with them originally, and you would explain to them how the Fair Credit Reporting Act of 1974 works and how they not only don't have the authority to ask you for it, or if they are indeed that corporation, you would like their information to see if they are valid to even discuss the matter with you.
That's James's knowledge.
Well, it, where we
oh yeah.
Very easily.
There you go.
That's very simple.
Yeah. Now we're gonna grab a quick question from the chat room, and
great,
speaking
wonderful.
On this subject, yeah, it says, when we choose to come here, do we make contracts with a family, for example, to have a particular earthly experience?
Well, now we'll be cheeky just a little bit. Some would say that they were the only hell their mama ever raised. So if you're talking about it like that, then yes. But now hold on. With whom would the contract be binding? Now, and we're going to answer the question, but we're just trying to make sure we clean this up. We're trying
uh-huh.
to say that the only contracts that are written, why do you need a contract? Back in the olden days, you didn't have contracts. You had spit in the hand. And all that said was, my word is my bond. And what that means is that if I tell you I'm going to do something, then before God, you need to know I'm going to do it. Spit,
right.
spit, handshake, we're done. Now, would that be a verbal contract? Well, the only time you need a contract is if you know that you're not going to keep your word. So the only time you'd have to come forth to make a contract is if you know it's going to go horribly wrong.
I see.
And who's got contract with? Is it with you? Well, you're a sinner. You're a sinner. That church tells you you're a sinner. So all have sinned and fallen short of the grace and glory of God. Jihad. Oh, well, you're screwed because now you don't have a choice. Now you're less than right out of the chute. So you better have a good contract and a good lawyer to get you out of it because that's what it's going to take. So the answer softly and lovingly, because we ain't pushing against anything, would be no. There is no contract or basis of an agreement or understanding that you imbibe, embrace between you and you to get you to the place where it soothes you into the place of coming forth as a marvelous creator to create. So,
excellent. Yeah, let's turn back to some economics here, because, I mean, I've been hearing the past several weeks, and, you know, I guess James is going to jump in here, that now, you know, because of the way the economy is going, now, you know, as Ion and Bob was saying earlier, you know, run from the banks. You know, the banks are vampires. So now I've been hearing a lot about gold and silver, that people should put their money in gold and silver, you know, and keep a little bit of cash on hand, whatever. But basically, if you want your money to be stabilized, if you will, because the going, you know, I mean, everybody's talking about, you know, the U.S. dollars in the toilet. Okay, so now, you know, as when we talk about running from the banks, so now how can we go about putting our money in gold and silver, and what benefits does that offer to the individual as opposed to dealing with the banks?
Well, if you're using gold and silver as the gauge or the score of how you're doing, we'd say leave it alone. Don't bother, because it won't be enough. That's like putting your confidence in a government that's going to take care of you. Well, they're washfish. They'll change on you. The administrative, see, the GOP used to be blue, and now they're red, and the Yellow Dog Democrats used to be red, and now they're blue. They can't even keep their own colors together. See, they even change amongst their parties. So we would say neither. Once you come into your power, that never even comes up in conversation. Do you see?
I see.
If it flows freely and easy and you come into your own power, you can give away everything. Here, take it all. Take my gold, take my silver, take my houses, take my children, take my wife. I can hardly afford her anyway. Take everything, take it all, take it all. And guess what? Let's have a redistribution of the wealth. Here you go. This is empirically proven. So we'll use your words. We won't use non-physical because you don't believe us no way. So that's all right. It's all right. It's not a problem. Here you go. If you take all the gold and all the silver and all the contracts and all the hedge funds and all the Enron stock and all the energy and all the gas and all the wind and all the air and all the water and all the dirt and everything, take it all. Take it every bit. Gather it all up and divide it amongst every creator, human, on your planet equally. If one gets a printer, they all get a printer. If one gets a candle, they all get a candle. If one gets a ficus tree, they all get a ficus tree. And you divide that equally between every creator on this planet, all 6.5-7 billion of them, equally. Guess what? In a year and 6 months or less, all the wealth that's piled up everywhere will be right back where it was when you started that process. And you go, that's impossible. Well, it's not, because that's what happens. It's not about your action that brings success or comfort or compassion or wealth into your being, enoughness. It's not about that. How do you do, if you have a trillionaire, how do you calculate their hourly wage? How much do they make an hour if they're a trillionaire? The numbers crazy after a little bit. But the intention, when money flows freely and easily to them, they don't care. They already have more than they could spend if they went spending full out today. It's chasing them. It's running them down. People are calling them saying, please have lunch. I have money. I want to do something. And you're the one to do it with, because every time you have flatulence, somebody gets a gets an account. Every time you sneeze, the markets move. Oh, we have to be the Oracle of Omaha. That's the only way to make it. Well, that's only because you come into your power and you know who you are, and it really doesn't make any difference. And money flows freely and easily to you. So it will, and it does. It's law. You can't undo it. The same way that you start singing the song of less than and lack, and then you find yourself in an abundance of debt, an abundance of problems, an abundance of everybody telling you what to do. It's like these young whippersnappers and says, I'm tired of this. I'm not having this. I'm going to join the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and Marines. Because I'm sick and tired of people telling me what to do.
Right.
Okay. So when you get like that, then, so the answer is, come back. You're getting it down to where you're asking the right questions, however, no. This is wonderful. The heavens are rejoicing. They are rejoicing because for the first time in a long time, they've come into a place where they're down to the only thing that'll ever work anyway. And it's not how you are strategically based or planned. You do understand that if the world was made out of gold, that men would die for a handful of dirt.
True indeed.
Mm-hmm. It's relative is our point. So, if you can come into your power, you don't even have that conversation. Who cares if you get paid in gold? Who cares if you get paid in chickens? Chickens are good. It's not a problem. It's just all relative. I mean, we find it quite amazing that lobster is less expensive now than ground beef, not even ground chuck. Lobsters, they're throwing them away. It costs more to run their boats than they're getting for these traps full of lobsters. Because people, human creators, see lobster as an extravagant, as an over-the-top, as a celebratory. It's the Chateau Lafitte of good wine. 57 was a very good year. They see this as something that they haven't earned. They're not worthy to enjoy. So what happens is nobody buys it. So now lobsters, which used to be $10, $12, $15, $30 a pound, $100 a piece if you got it at the right restaurant, now they don't even buy them. They don't even put them in their tanks. Because if they were in their tanks, nobody would buy them anyway, because that's outside of their place of allowing that they'll allow into their experience.
I see.
It's very relative.
When you say come into our power, you know, because I love that expression, like, what are some of the things we can do, Ion and gentlemen, that we can begin for someone who's external oriented and who's been walking around with a victim mentality, believing that they're the victim of circumstances instead of the creator of circumstances? How do we begin to come into our power so we can be the creators of our circumstances?
Very easy, very easy. And we're going to do it at the simplest level. Here's the only problem. The only reason that we're having to explain this at all is because you have lying eyes and you have this mind that tricks you. Okay? Mind is the problem. The labyrinth. The labyrinth of the mind. You're only using 7 to 8% of this whole thing called a cranium, a mind, anyway. So something else is running rampant that you're not noticed, you're not cognizant of, okay? So once you start hitting on all cylinders, it starts to pique your interest a little bit that there are other dynamics larger than what you've allowed so far. So the simplest way, let's go easy. It's called a 3-2-1 process. And they go, well, I don't know. I didn't take college. I don't know trigonometry. You know, my algorithms aren't quite what they used to be. I don't know the atomic weight or the angles of those numbers and who invented those numbers and why are they in that order. See, we're not talking about high-minded. We're talking about like if you're going to launch a rocket. They don't count up. They count down.
Exactly.
Correct? Well, why? Well, it just seems logical, which is not a good reason other than you're counting down until liftoff or what you call manifestation. Right?
Uh-huh.
So you got this process, any process, 3. I want to be happy. Oh, no, that's glib and cliche. No. I want $4,216.26 in my grubby little hands that I can control the way I want to, and I want it now. Okay? That's a want. Doesn't make any difference why. That's not anything about that. We're trying to establish to get you out of a victim mentality into a conqueror mentality. Okay? So you can use it for, it could be as simple as a Milky Way bar. I haven't had one in forever. Mama said I wasn't worthy. Papa said he'd rot my teeth. I can't have a Milky Way. I only dream of Milky Ways. It's an impossible dream. I can't afford it. The store went out of business where I used to buy it when I had money to buy it. My credit card's no good no more. I don't have a debit card. The government hadn't given me their money check, so I don't know how I could swap it for a Milky Way bar. Well, just ease off all that. We know why you don't have a Milky Way bar. You're asking the question of how do you come into your power to achieve a Milky Way bar, correct? So here's what you do. You give your undivided attention on, let's say, a Milky Way bar, something simple, or a cup of coffee. That's easy.
Uh-huh.
Most people enjoy coffee in the morning or all day. But enjoy a Milky Way bar. Embrace it. Give that your undivided attention. Speak only of how wonderful a Milky Way bar is. How, Ion, how are you today? Oh, I'm just fine. And did I mention how much I was looking forward to a Milky Way bar? Did you know that is the smoothest, most marvelous creation that's ever been on the planet? That chocolate, the cacao that they use, it's just superfluous. That's suave. I mean, it's smooth. And you know, when I let that Milky Way bar slide down my throat hole, my stomach just jumps. I get to feeling that sugar and that nougat, which isn't too heavy. It's just right. And, oh, and it's just so, you know, and it just makes me so happy. And after about 45 minutes, they go, "We're glad you're okay, Mr. Ion. Thank you very much for having a nice day. Oh, by the way, I sure am looking forward to a Milky Way bar." Let the words of your mouth and the meditations of your heart align yourself. Okay? So now what's coming out of your mouth is a Milky Way bar. Now, the next part is two. Remember, we got a countdown. We're trying to achieve liftoff. So we have identified the issue, wanting of a Milky Way bar. Now, number two is not your work. You don't have to do a thing. And it would suit everyone, all concerned, for you just to stay out of number two. That's where non-physical, just like when Aladdin rubbed the genie's lamp and the genie came out, the blue genie came out, and what did he say? Now, Aladdin, you're not worthy. Now, Aladdin, you're a swamp rat. Now, you know you can't have this power. Now, you didn't come from a good family. There's probably miscegenation in your heritage. No, you know. What are you doing? You're dabbling in things you don't understand. You better just leave it alone and just let this go, because you know it's fixing to get ugly. And it's been ugly before, so you might as well just ease off on this now, because it's not going to work well for you. No. What does Aladdin say? Non-physical says, "Aladdin, your wish is my command." And how often does Aladdin say this? Every single time, without fail or exception. Every single time. Because, see, Aladdin's got a non-physical that's part of him. Remember, that's how the coroner tells if you're still with us or not. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
So
you
have a spirit man, a non-physical. Now, you leave that alone. Just embrace it. Non-physical will say, "Your wish is my command." And you go, "Well, I was wanting a Milky Way bar." And, "Well, why do you want a Milky Way bar?" "Well, I could just feel it sliding down my throat hole and hitting my stomach and just being all wonderful and that sugar working and that cacao, that perfectly smooth texture, and just the way it feels in my mouth, how I feel holding it, the deliciousness that it brings. It's just satisfying. It just makes a warm, fuzzy Wait, we're back to the joy of the Snicker bar, Milky Way bar. So,
true.
You see, that's the question. That's the only question, is your wish is my command. Then one comes up. Uh-oh, now, rarely do they stop that countdown at one. Typically, by the time they get on that countdown and that shuttle's fixing to shoot, they don't quit at one. Now, you can, but, oh, it's rare. Time you get to one, it's about over, okay? It's up. They've done fired the gas. It's already dead. They're just waiting on a disease to claim the body. But you can stop it. But when you get to one, what that allows is you to redefine it. You, individual you, meat sack you, less than you, get to decide. if you're going to allow it to come into your experience or not. Okay? Because what if you've got to talking about Milky Ways, Milky Ways, Milky Ways, every time you turn around, everybody you talk to, call people on the phone, call them telemarketers back and say, I'm saying, y'all called me and I didn't take your call, but I want to tell you how wonderful a Milky Way is. I want to tell you how good that's going to feel sliding down my throat hole and how wonderful it is. Wait, we've done that already. Tell everybody to listen. They get paid to talk on the phone. Talk to them about how wonderful this experience that's coming into your reality is. It's a good, better time than spend on how you're not going to buy the gutters or the siding on your brick home. They spend, it's logical. All right. So now you get down to one where you redefine it. Because what if non-physical says, okay, here's all the Milky Way bars that are. Every one that is on its way to you. And then you go, wait a minute now. Whoa. I'd have to have warehouses. I'd have to have refrigeration because it's kind of warm in the south or too cold in the north. It might break. Oh, the weather's pretty good, but now it's filling up the yard. It would invade my neighbor's fence. It would be too much. It would be more than I could have. Then you re-qualify or redefine, rather than one Milky Way, you decide how many, the quantity with emphasis supplied. You redefine that in a one state. So you don't want all the food that you're ever going to eat the rest of your life piled into your backyard at one time. You'd much rather enjoy that sort of doled out by the meal, don't you guess? But that's where one comes in. Now, non-physical doesn't care. They'll send you all the cattle in Omaha. They'll send you every one, all of it. They'll send it to your house on the hoof. All the porterhouse steaks you want, but you got to feed them till you eat them. So that's the one process where you qualify and redefine what it is that you actually are bringing into your experience. So that's your limiting qualifier. You redefine it of exactly what it is. Well, actually, I'd be much happy with a case of Milky Way bars, and I can comfortably store them in my refrigerator, and I can easily enjoy that nougat sliding down my throat hole. And I don't have to worry about my money check coming in, because all I'm interested in is in the Milky Way bar. See, I'm not interested in how to own a Milky Way. I'm interested in how to have a Milky Way.
Okay? Ah.
So then, once you get that sort of question solved, then lift off. In a very short window of time, like instantaneous, you have what we call a manifestation. And what happens is that shows up in your experience. Now, if you've never, ever, ever in your whole life had a Milky Way bar, it might be quite a shock to your system. But typically what happens, just like a cup of coffee, if you enjoy coffee, you don't get up and dance and scream and holler and cry and wail and have a fit. You get up and you either have someone make it for you or you enjoy a cup of coffee. Well, that's no big deal. You're just pissed off if you don't have a cup of coffee. But if you really went through the dynamic of what you have to do to get a cup of coffee, why, you'd be singing from the housetops. You got to grow the plant. You got to get the beans. You got to have somebody grow the beans. You got to plant marigolds so that the bugs don't eat them up because they find them just delicious. You got Juan Valdez in his little burrow, got to haul them up somewhere. Then they've got to be graded and sorted, and then they've got to be roasted or hauled, and then distributed, and then packaged, and then you get to the store, and then you got to choose, and then they got to be fresh, and then you got to have a grinder, or somebody's got to grind it. Then you got to drag it home. Then you got to store it safely. Then you got to create water. Then after you get all that, you've got to make fire. And if you don't have fire readily, then you got to create fire to heat the water, and then to run the certain amount of water, hot water, at a certain, not too hot, but just right, to get the best of those coffee grounds, the essence of that coffee that it is. Then you got to have a decanter. Somebody's got to create that. And if you're not the marvelous creator and you're doing it by default, you're just going to trust Starbucks to do it for you. Then you've got to create a Starbucks on the corner to be able to give them $3.25 for a double mocha latte. And then you got to have a vessel to drink it out of. And after about 2.3 seconds, the most marvelous creation on earth so far today has been a cup of coffee that I just don't think anything about.
Ah, I see.
Now, we call that particular description of an event, we call that a tea tale. We're easy to get into what you call a T-tail, but you don't think about it. And if you start realizing the dynamic of what goes into just you having a McDonald's cup of coffee, it gets pretty exciting. The same thing with everything that's in your experience that you don't even give any regard to, you see. You don't give regard to. So then the dynamic, when you start coming into the appreciation mode of fully understanding and appreciating what you already got, you're all of a sudden not less than. You're all of a sudden not in lack. You're not. So then you, therefore, are not unimportant or not, we don't even use those words, so we don't even know accurately how to describe them. You stop being beaten down, because it's only the king that would enjoy all this work to have a little cup of Joe provided for you. Not to mention poor Mr. Coffee gave his very life just so you could have some.
I see. So basically what you're saying is just saturate our minds with whatever it is we wish to manifest. And I've often heard it say, act as if, act as is,
Not what if, yes,
uh-huh.
Not what if, not when if, not how if, not why if, but as if. Good.
If it's already been manifested, and as long as you continue that, as if it already had been manifested, and if you continue that line of thought, then you'll look up and your manifestation is sitting right in your lap.
It has no choice, but you can't eliminate it. They can deliver the coffee. You can bring the cup of coffee and get it in a cup and put it in your car and be driving 100 miles an hour. In the traffic, on the 10, with your newspaper and your mascara or your two packs of Camels and your book report that you're working on, and you're tweeting, and you got your PDA raging and the music's going, you can pour that scalding hot coffee right in your lap.
That's
right. And you can enjoy the very deliciousness that is and not get any of it in your mouth. So that's that whole process, you see. You can undo yourself. That was what that point was all about. It's just be easy about it. Be easy about it. Spend as much time as it takes to get that cup of coffee appreciating it. Have nothing in your experience that you don't appreciate first. Now, and once you've done that a little bit and you've convinced yourself or tricked yourself into the reality that you are indeed a marvelous creator, then the next phase and level that you'll want to embrace here is very simply take no action until you've answered this one question. And this question you'll ask yourself all day long, all day, every day. What is the fastest path to my joy? Okay? Now, we're serious.
Uh-huh.
Take no action. And we'll give you an example. You wake up, it's morning time, you wake up, and all of a sudden you realize that your bladder is full, okay? And you go, you ask yourself before, don't you put your feet on that floor? No. You lay there still and quiet. You just come back out of your slumber, and your bladder is full, and you're about to bust, and you know you got to go, it's morning time, I got to go. Nope. You ask yourself the question. What is the fastest path to my joy? And you go, let me think. Well, my bladder's about to explode, so yeah, I think the fastest path to my joy would go to be relieved. Okay? And if you can affirmatively answer that question, then get up and then go to the bathroom. Okay? Now that sounds just trite because that's a biological function, but we say no. You can get yourself in a place where you don't know you've got to go.
Wow.
They sell pads for that.
True.
appreciate that and answer that question. And then the next question will come along. Well, what's the fastest path to my joy? Well, I'm starving to death, and I think I want some coffee and I want some chicken and waffles. Oh, that sounds good. And I want some grits and some greens or something wonderful, some tomato and gravy or some... Oh, I know, I want me a bald-headed man, some sorghum syrup and cow butter on a piping hot biscuit when I bust that open, that steam comes out of there, and after a little while, you know, you start tasting it. Good Sorg blackstrap molasses, good hot, fresh biscuits. You see, you can start tasting it. You can start smelling it. Your mind is so marvelous, it can move you into a place where you're like, help me, Holy Ghost, I got to have some sorghum syrup here. So
true.
And you can really come into that. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Well, that's how that works, you see. And then what happens is, then you become very easy with everything. Pushing against nothing, loving, appreciate everything. Then those that aren't like you don't offend you. And whatever their sexual orientation is, you're so busy loving and appreciate everything in your reality, you don't notice. And you ain't pushing against no jihad or ehad or ahad or peapod or iPod. You ain't pushing against none of them. You're so busy all day, every day, loving and appreciate everything in your experience, looking forward to that next wonderful manifestation that's right on your heels. You see? You're so busy taking care of your business, you ain't got time to be worrying about everybody else's. Then all of a sudden, they'll call you on the phone and says, you think you're just everything. Well, yes, I am. Thank you for calling. Well, I'm just calling to tell you I'm never going to call you again. And if you don't know who they are, you go, thanks for calling. Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate the call, but you could have just as easily left a message leaving me that. But if it's your wife or your mama or someone that you're a loved one that calls that, that's a different conversation. Now you're in the co-creation part of this overlapping universes that you each are in the center of. Then you're going to go, wife of mine, husband of mine, lover of mine, well, what do you mean you're never going to talk to me again? What have I done to offend you? Blah, 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 blah. And then the fight ensues, and then you figure it out, and sometimes you only do that so you can make up, and that's all right. Making up is way fun, so that's fine. But then you engage. The words mean different things depending on the tone and where they're coming from. Okay?
I see.
So we'll go easy with that process. But basically, then you can live like Jack LaLanne. You can live to be 100 and ever how old you are. And guess what? He looks as good as he did from the 50s.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about them. You don't have to worry about them. That tobacco, well, I don't know. That's what killed George Burns at 102. That them cigars, they got him, and I guess he had 4 a day all his life. That's what did him in. But you're kind of like going, well, if I'm 102 and I did what I wanted to do and I followed my joy, my bliss, as it were, and it created that whole experience, and I had a couple of stogie cigars every day of my life, and I lived to be 102 and happy most every day of my life, what's so wrong with that?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You see? So now it's not what it is, it's how you're engaging it in with you. So the distance between anything that is the distance between you and you. Not between someone else and you. It's between you and you. Somebody asks you a question that you don't want to answer because it's none of their damn business. That's the sweetest way I know how to say it. There's a sweeter way. I just don't know it. You answer the question this way. Thank you for that question. Why is it that you want to know?
Mm-hmm.
And you're not being mean because you're not being mean. They're just being nosy. And you don't want
exactly.
to ask them because they're your friend. You're trying to be as nice as you can. Say, why do you want to know? And then let them spend 45 minutes telling you why it ain't none of their business that they know that anyway. And then they'll typically say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to invade. Say, no, that's perfectly all right. And then shut up. Don't answer the question then. Just remind them that you want to know why they want to know. You say, then you're having a way different conversation. And it won't be long till they won't be asking you the questions that you don't even want to answer anyway.
So, Curtis, I wanted to point out that we've all heard of the law of attraction. That's 1, 2, 3. 3, 2, 1 is the opposite. Compliments, but it's the opposite of the law of attraction. That's what's interesting here. 3, 2, 1, not 1, 2, 3.
Well, the dynamic of the issue that's the problem is that you human creators, you're marvelous, and you created this thing, a false premise. You created this thing. It's not correct. You don't know when it started, and you certainly don't know when it ends, but you created this concept, this meme, this failing thought of time.
I see.
There just is no time. There is no time. If there was time, then you should be able to tell me when it started. And if it was time, then you should be able to tell me when it's going to end. You see?
Yes,
and
indeed.
You can't. You can't do either. So if you could just take the time. Time is money, right? Uh-oh.
That's so they say.
Well, there is no money, so therefore there is no time.
Ta-da. I see. Excellent. Ta-da. Gentlemen, it has been such a pleasure. We're winding that time. I'm already plotting you guys next visit. So James already knows when he hears me say that. He's like, okay, Curtis is going to be calling me within 24 to 48 hours.
It's interesting because when I deal with people that have had, like, financial issues, I'll put the responsibility entirely within them. They're in charge of how they got there, and they're in charge of getting out of it as well. So it puts the person in a position where they're going to have to, like, you know, require to get their power back, and I think Ion demonstrates that entirely very well socially, especially economically and everything else that he's talking about. That you are the creator.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, I'm bringing all three of you guys back from now on. But just take some time, gentlemen, to let us know what you got going on now, and tell us about this, James's wonderful radio show, where we can find you guys all the time besides here on Occult Science Radio, and let us know what you got coming up, please.
Curtis, we're at HowIonic.com, HOWIONIC.com for more information, samples of Ion, HowIonic.com for more.
Mm-hmm. Also, every Wednesday I've expanded the length of time we have with Ion, so on Wednesdays from now on he'll be on for 2 hours, and it's that's a special time. It's not just if there's financial questions he'll address those, but if there's other questions, physics, biology, personal, whatever, he will be available live then, or you may, again, go to howionic.com.
Okay. Bob, any information you want to share with us, buddy?
Just that that TV series, Flash Forward, Ion, when you said if everybody knew what was going to happen or something like that, then they'd have to deal with it. That's what Flash Forward presents.
Yes, and they actually do. They just trick themselves into not accepting it.
Yeah.
See, they're constantly creating the next creation, because by the time it gets there, then they've got it. And then you'd say, well, Ion, I don't want a Milky Way bar. I already have one. Well, no. Before you get through with that one, you're thinking about how to get the next one.
Mm.
So if you knew that, then it was no big deal. It, in that particular show, which is great fun, except for the negative connotation that they spin on it, but it's great fun because then if you knew you were going to be alive in 6 months, which you are, you could live as though there were no tomorrow, because there's not. When do you enjoy tomorrow?
That's
when
true.
When do you get to tomorrow?
So that's
you
right.
Can't worry about tomorrow. Because if you live today like there's no tomorrow, you're never going to get to tomorrow anyway. So why not live today?
And you live like that? Live that way. Can never. So the other thing, Curtis, is that there's this new show, V. It's all about the Independence Day kind of scenario where the ET showed up. Well, I'm telling you, people, we got an ET, an FT. We got it all here. Ion is from the Guff, and there's a zillion entities. We have the resources of a zillion entities that don't create, just know what we're doing.
Ah, I see. James, sit by the phone tomorrow. I will be calling you tomorrow, and I have to bring the Platinum Trio back. That's what I call you guys, the Platinum Trio. But listen, but listen, my friends, it has been such a pleasure, you know, and I extend a heartfelt thanks, not only from me, but from the entire audience, for you guys taking time out of your very busy schedules to be here with us today. And judging from the feedback we've been getting in the chat room, oh, yeah, they want you guys to come back too. So, yes, guys, you know, and everybody, please go to James's website, you know, to hear the radio shows. And that is, James, what is it, AchieveRadio.com?
You just go James Martinez Cashflow, Google that. It'll take you right to the destination.
Absolutely. James, Bob, first time being with us, James and Bob have been here before, but welcome to the family.
Oh,
and like I said, thank you so much, gentlemen. It was such a pleasure. I truly and got some very tonight. I hope everybody investigates the 10, getting our 10 numbers, and for those of us who are running businesses, we look into the foundational trust as well. But next time you guys come on.
Right,
oh yes.
For $2 trillion.
And the next time you guys come on, we're going to talk about cold fusion. Okay. Okay, so with that, James, Bob, and Ion, we... yes, Mysteries Bookstore. For everyone on here at Occult Science Radio. We bid the beloved family peace, love, and power. And please, everybody, walk with strength. Peace and love, everybody. Good night.